This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Congratulations, you're getting married. As Rita Rudner puts it, you finally found that special person you want to annoy for the rest of your life. The Pablo Neruda poems are Xerox, the tux has been laid out, you've registered for your espresso maker, and you've figured out how to arrange the guests who don't speak to each other. You can relax, right? Well, hardly. The forecast says rain, the dress won't zip, the best man is drunk, and the flower girl just ate the basket. Take a deep breath and possibly a Xanax. This is the happiest day of your life. Claire Lewis has seen quite a few of those happy days in her new book, Exposed: Confessions of a Wedding Photographer. She regales us with tales of grooms with cold feet, frantic wedding planners, and a few of the truly delightful ceremonies she's also documented. She joined us in a moment to share her stories. Later, we'll hear from a dancer who choreographs custom first dances for that special day, and from an expert on that most delicate of speeches, the wedding toast. Hint, any story involving underpants is out. Tell us the story of the best, most outrageous, the most memorable, the most repeatable wedding toast you've ever given or heard. Our phone number is 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org, and you can share your story on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. Later in the hour, the politics of reconciliation in Iraq. The senior elected member of the parliament, Adnan Pachachi, joins us to take your calls. But first, Exposed. Claire Lewis is a wedding photographer, and her book is called Exposed: Confessions of a Wedding Photographer. She's with us today from member station KQED in San Francisco. Welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Hi, Neil. It's great to be here.
And I wanted to ask you about a couple of things you keep in your camera bag besides cameras. For example, mild sedatives.
Well, yeah, that's true. There are many situations I run into at weddings where, in fact, the best way to deal with what's going on is some sort of a mood softening medication, although, of course, non-prescription.
And then you say strong sedatives.
Well, yes. Those would be the prescription ones.
And those aren't for you?
Well, sometimes they are. And occasionally they are for the wedding planner. And who often is having a hard time, and occasionally, of course, there's the bride.
And then you also list the many uses of your Swiss Army knife, including emergency shoe, dress, and bra adjustment, wedding dress label removal. Almost every wedding, you say. I didn't know about that.
It's amazing that there'll be labels stuck on. There's those little things that are on the side to hang the dress on the hanger, which always seem to stick out the side of the dress. There's all kinds of things, and there's always a few threads hanging where they shouldn't be, and crazy bits of the bustle that are sticking out. So the Swiss Army knife is very useful.
Equipment and bag repair, you say too many times to count. And for opening champagne bottles, ditto.
Absolutely. You need to. You're often in the room with the bride when she's getting ready and the bridesmaids, and the one thing that's really going to help the situation is a bottle of champagne. And someone will have thought to bring one, and nobody has an opener. So that's another way you can use the army knife if you need a little help prying the top off the champagne.
These are hard-won lessons, are they not?
I would say so. I mean, I've been at this on and off for 20 years now, and just about anything that can happen to you at a wedding has probably happened to me.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I would say yes, hard one indeed.
We're asking our listeners today to give us examples of the best, most memorable, most repeatable wedding toast that they have ever heard in your life. I wonder, Claire, what one could you remember?
Well, you know, the thing about toasts, funnily enough, is it isn't actually what people say so much. It's two things. It's the length of the toast. They're almost always too long. And because people drink too much before they make the toast. And the other problem is timing, because what happens is usually people will have often sat through the ceremony. Sometimes it's a full mass and they've been through an hour and a half ceremony. Then they've had a cocktail hour, or which nowadays often is 2 hours. And then they sit down, and it's time to eat, and people are hungry, and they're really ready to eat. And the caterers are lined up holding the trays with all the salads, and everybody's ready to go. And on the schedule, it says, best man will make a brief toast. And 45 minutes later, you're still sitting there. And you know you're in trouble when the best man starts off with, you know, stories from when they were in preschool together and works his way very slowly to the present day.
You did not start out to be a wedding photographer. You write in your book, I am not a crusading photojournalist, not a portraitist to the stars, not on assignment for National Geographic or traveling to distant places to document the miseries of the world's unfortunates. I shoot weddings, and on almost any weekend I can be found in the high-stress world of heightened emotions, familial tension, exaggerated expectations, and mood-softening medications that surround this ancient and fraught ritual. You make it sound like a very high-stress environment.
It is a high-stress environment, which actually, oddly enough, is what I like about it. And I did think that once upon a time I'd be covering war zones and things like that. And often I will come home from a wedding and feel that that's exactly where I've been. I think that there are so many pressures on people at weddings. I mean, there's social pressures and family pressures and friends and religious pressures, and you're bringing together two groups of people often who you wouldn't normally ever bring together, two families, but also two groups of friends. And there's also this desire to make it the absolutely best, most perfect day. And you add all of that together, and of course you're going to end up with a situation. Then you add in all these other things like the weather and you know, deciding to make your dog your ring bearer or whatever you've done. And you know, it's bound to be a crazy, high-stress situation. But it's also, I mean, from a photographer's perspective, it's absolutely fantastic because everything happens at weddings.
And right in front of you.
It's very unpredictable. And right in front of you. And it's your job and your privilege to document it. And it's wonderful.
You do describe some brides who I think could be fairly described as hideous. You also describe some as truly wonderful. But the one word you don't see in this book is that word bridezilla.
Oh, you know, that's so nice of you to mention that, because I left that word out very, very deliberately. This bridezilla thing, I know it's a word a lot of people use. I don't like that word. I have a lot of sympathy for people in the process of planning their weddings, and even the ones that go totally off the rails, and definitely some of them do. I think it's very hard. I mean, you look at those wedding guides. I don't know if you've ever looked at those wedding guides, but it's like a fashion magazine. Everything's perfect, and those women in magazines are all tall, and they're all thin, and they're all beautiful, and it's like that in the wedding guides. Everything is absolutely perfect. And that's the example held up to people. And then you add in the fact that it all costs a fortune and your friends are telling you what to do and your family wants certain things. And, you know, this is what leads to perfectly sane, otherwise completely competent, normal women sitting down on my couch and collapsing in floods of tears because they can't find, you know, the right shade of blue for their table linens. And you look at them and you think, what is happening here? This is crazy. But it's not really about that. It's about trying to make things someone else's idea of perfect. Mm-hmm. And it's tremendously difficult for people. And they feel so badly about it afterwards, which I think is very sad. They will look back on how they went sort of crazy when they were planning their weddings. And they'll really regret it. And I think it's a great shame.
Here's an email we got in response to our request for most memorable toasts at a wedding. This one from Harry. When one of my twin boys married a veterinarian, his brother toasted them by saying, "Two, we know you are marrying Amy because she is beautiful and intelligent," all the usual compliments. And then he said, "Amy, we're glad you are continuing your love of animals by marrying Tom." We have laughed often over that. This one from Tom. I paraphrased a founding father, when I toasted my bride, "Julie is proof that God loves me and wants me to be happy." My mother-in-law later discovered it was Ben Franklin, and what I actually said was, "Beer is proof that God loves me and wants me to be happy." My mother-in-law was pleased
I
was happy, so I was off the hook. Let's see if we can get a caller on the line. This is John. John with us from Mesa, Arizona.
Hi, Neil. How are you?
I'm well, thank you.
Good. The story I was talking about was I'm a church organist. And about 20 years ago, and this relates also back to what your panelist was talking about with brides wearing these dresses with multiple flounces and all kinds of stuff. At a Greek Orthodox wedding, at one point in the ceremony, they called for a ritual where they walk around the altar three times. And this bride, who I'd gotten into a little altercation with just before the ceremony because she kept me waiting over an hour and a half while I had another wedding to get to, as she started walking around, she knocked over one of the tapers. And it set the train of her dress on fire.
Oh, my gosh.
And, So nobody was hurt, but I was kind of sitting there very smugly watching it because it was like it served her right. The only reason she kept me holding was because she kept claiming something about bride's prerogative, and she was waiting for some aunt and or whatever. And it was kind of comical. And actually, I was kind of distracted at the moment it happened. A couple of the ushers ran over and they started stomping on it. And I was thinking to myself, oh, this must be the part in the wedding where they're stomping on the glass, not realizing or confusing the Greek Orthodox wedding with the Jewish wedding.
I thought you were going to say you burst into Disco Inferno.
I wanted to, believe me. So, for the recessional, I kind of took a revenge out on it. I played a souped-up version of Suicide is Painless, which was the version of the, which is the theme song from
MASH. Yeah, yeah.
And I don't think they realized it.
John, thanks very much for the story. Appreciate it.
No problem.
Yeah.
Okay, have a good one. Bye-bye.
Appreciate it. Joining us now is Gabriella Barnstone, a dance choreographer for Matrimony Money, a company that helps couples create custom first dances for their weddings. She joins us from our bureau in New York. And nice to have you today on Talk of the Nation.
Oh, I'm so happy to be here.
And in addition to mangling toasts, a lot of couples don't manage to get that first dance right, do they?
Well, it's not so much that they don't manage to get it right. It's that for the longest time, I think that people were going to take ballroom classes and then doing a dance from those classes. And we always thought that that was such an odd choice if you're not somebody who goes out ballroom dancing on a regular basis.
You're not Fred and Ginger.
Right. So we felt like the result was really awkward and that sort of needed to be addressed.
And you incorporate a lot of different styles.
Yes. Well, the styles are really based on the couple. So these are customized dances. And so it's based on your personality and how you already move. So the first thing we do is we ask them to pick a song. And so that really starts the whole thing off.
Mm-hmm.
And then we go from there.
Okay. We'll find out some instances of songs chosen well or badly and dances danced well or badly in just a moment. Stay with us, if you would, Gabrielle. And if you'd like to join the conversation again, we're asking for the best, worst, most memorable wedding toast you've ever heard. 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. We'll also continue to talk with Claire Lewis about her book, Exposed: Confessions of a Wedding Photographer. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. There's a reason people cry at weddings, and sometimes that reason is just plain stress. Things do not always go as planned on the big day, and Claire Lewis is there to capture it all with her camera. We're talking with her today about her book on life as a wedding photographer. If you'd like to read about the time a bride and groom started arguing while Claire was taking their wedding portrait, you can find an excerpt from Exposed on our website at npr.org/talk. We're also speaking with Gabriella Barnstone, who helps couples create custom first dances for their weddings. And we want to hear your stories. What's the best, worst, or most memorable wedding toast you've ever heard? And here's one we got from Linda in Zeeland, Michigan, by email. I really enjoyed the toast at my brother's wedding. Among other jokes, there were some that struck home, such as, the real reason Al's marrying her is so he doesn't have to remember how to spell Rutenbauer anymore. Give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org, and check out our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. And Gabriella Barnstone, give us an example of one of these custom dances that worked out well, you think?
I sort of hearken back to the very first dance that we were asked to do kind of before the business was official. And it was some friends of ours, and it was to a Ima Sumac song, Go for Mambo, in the 60s, which, you know, she did all those sort of, those high octaves.
Yeah, she could hit about six octaves, but none of them well.
Yeah, so it was very dramatic, and it was very, the dance was very sort of Steve Martin, Gilda Radner. You know, she sort of was sitting there coyly, and he sort of rushed over to her and offered her a really big dramatic hand, and then she kind of twirled into him, and we had him doing, like, you know, leaps, and this was before the business was official, and they got asked to do an encore. So they
really,
they had to do it twice, and that was sort of the first time that we got the idea. And then, of course, since then there have been lots of memorable ones. Last year we had a really great couple who wanted to do something to the theme song from The Spy Who Loved Me. And so they did a little sort of James Bond and his woman routine. So, yeah, there have been lots.
There have been lots of interesting dances. And basically what you help couples is get through this. Well, a lot of people really don't know what to do or what to do or what they can do well.
Right, exactly. Right. The idea is, you know, like I said before, we just felt like it was this really awkward thing to go take dance classes and then make a dance based on these steps that you learned. So mm-hmm. this is actually a dance that's more about you and about whatever your capabilities already are. And so that makes people actually a lot more comfortable and also allows them to have a good time, which is the main thing, really. And then the result is actually that it's kind of infectious. You know, the audience gets excited and then everybody wants to dance.
And I guess that's the point, that everybody should have a good time.
Exactly.
Gabriella Barnstone, thanks very much for your time today. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Gabriella Barnstone, a dance choreographer for Matrimony Moni. There's a link to her website on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. She was with us today from our bureau in New York. And joining us now is Veronica. Veronica calling us from Lansing in Michigan.
That's right.
Hi, go ahead, please.
Well, I sort of went from the best sort of wedding toast experience one could have to the worst with my own wedding in September of 2005. My maid of honor gave this beautiful toast, you know, short to the point, as your first panelist said. It doesn't have to be long. She even wrote us a wonderful little haiku, personalized haiku. Wonderful, great. And then my father-in-law comes to the dance floor and takes the mic. Now, this is a man who really loved attention, the life of the party, so I was already scared as to what he was going to do for the toast. Well, he sort of gets into the toast, and all of a sudden, all these women stand up from their, you know, respective tables and are pulling out some sort of item of clothing from either under their dress or their purses. And it turns out that my father-in-law had given pairs of underwear, men's underwear, to 4 to 5 female guests. And they were all bringing up underwear to the head table as if my husband had accidentally left
them.
Yes. Oh, how clever and cute.
And all of this recorded for posterity on 1,000 digital cameras.
You know what? I don't remember seeing any pictures. I think that everyone was too entirely shocked to actually get some sort of recording device and get these women with my husband's underwear on their cameras. So.
Well, I'm glad it was such a glorious occasion.
Me too.
Congratulations, Veronica.
Thanks.
Bye-bye. Claire, you would not have missed that moment, would you?
Absolutely not. My philosophy is that you keep shooting no matter what. And in fact, the crazier it gets, the more certainly you keep going. I think that's part of the good stuff.
Now, you want the pictures to be beautiful, but you also want them to be representative of what actually happened. You're not someone who's going to Photoshop the moon into the picture.
No, in fact, I shoot all film. I don't even shoot digitally, and the whole concept of Photoshop doesn't even enter into it. My approach is very much that you photograph what actually happens. So it's a documentary, and that means the good, the bad, and the ugly. It's all in there. And then people, you know, I give them a copy of everything, and if they want to edit out the parts that they don't want to remember, that's fine. But as far as I'm concerned, my job is to capture it all.
And reading your book, the quality of amnesia is extremely strong.
Oh, it's absolutely amazing. I mean, I had a wedding where the woman performing the ceremony had an attack of nerves, and she threw up on the bride in the middle of the ceremony, down the front of her dress, which, I mean, that's so over the top. You can't believe it. It's so horrible, and you're standing there photographing this. And when that woman came to pick up her pictures, she walked in and said, "Wasn't my wedding perfect?" And I thought, well, you know, isn't it a good thing? I think it's like childbirth, maybe, you know. If you remembered how much it hurt, you wouldn't do it again. So it's a good thing that people can forget the things that go wrong. It is complicated when it comes to the pictures, though, because often what people really do want are pictures that match their memory of what the wedding was like rather than what the wedding was actually like. And so that's, you know, that can be complicated because they will look at the pictures and they won't quite match the memory.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so that's a bit of a challenge for some people.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Yeah.
let's talk with David. David's with us from Priest Lake in Idaho.
Well, this was at a yacht club and a lot of propriety was involved. And my brother proceeded to, when he's marrying off his daughter, he proceeded to get up behind the mic and there have been a few, I guess, problems in getting everything ready, some discussions between the families that weren't too friendly, but he proceeded to get up and say, I really don't feel like I'm gaining a son, but losing a daughter.
I suspect that's the first time ever that's been used.
Thank you.
Thanks very much for the call, David. Well, joining us now is Sharon Naylor. She's the author of over 30 wedding planning books, including Your Special Wedding Toasts, and she's with us from our bureau in New York. Nice to have you on the program today.
Thank you very much. It's great to be here.
And I thought it was the best man who was supposed to give the toast, but obviously we're hearing the father of the bride steps into in front of the microphone from time to time.
Yeah, there's a big lineup of people who can give toasts at weddings, starting with the best man, and now regularly going to the maid of honor or matron of honor. Parents, bride and groom can give toasts, and bridal party can give toasts. So there's a whole bunch of people who can speak.
I hesitate to point out that not everybody is qualified to speak into a microphone.
This is true. Most people are terrified to speak into a microphone. So that's why I wrote the book with 20 tips for giving a good toast at a wedding.
Before we go to the do's, let's start with the don'ts. Are there things people should definitely avoid?
Well, obviously, being drunk is one of them.
That's a good step, yeah.
Number two, trying to memorize your toast. It's never a good idea to put yourself under that much pressure. So write a few phrases on an index card. Don't write out the whole thing, because otherwise you have a tendency to read word for word and sound very stilted. Another thing is don't go for revenge during your toast. It's not a time to express how envious you are of your big brother.
There are things that you should do, for example.
Oh, things you should do. Don't forget to propose the toast to the bride and groom. Some people get up and start talking about themselves, and they may say they're happy for the bride and groom, but they forget to lead the crowd in proposing the toast. They also may talk about themselves way too much. Another do is to make sure that you are sharing an appropriate story about the bride and the groom, not just the bride or the groom.
Uh-huh.
So you want to make sure that you're including them both and talking about their relationship, just not one or the other.
Let's see if we can get another caller on the line. This is Diane. Diane with us from, is it Salon in Nevada?
Salon, Nevada. That is correct.
Go ahead, please.
Well, I just wanted to say that the best wedding toast was for my own wedding, which was a couple of years back. It was a very NPR moment. Our best man did an absolute spot-on Garrison Keillor Lake Wobegon monologue about our relationship.
And this was all the news from Lake Wobegon.
Well, actually, it was all the news about Diane and Michael, but, I mean, he had the voice, he had the mannerisms, he had the glasses. He was just wonderful.
And which one of you played the Bachelor Norwegian Farmer?
Bachelor would probably tell you.
Thanks very much, Diane. Was it a great day?
It was a wonderful day. We did it on January 6th, which is 12th night, so we had a 12th night celebration with the Lord of Misrule and the whole shebang.
Oh, that sounds like a wonderful party. Thanks very much for the
Thank
phone call.
You.
Here's an email we got from Amy in Portland, Oregon. The best man says to the bride and groom and their unborn baby, congratulations and best wishes. Well, you could have heard a pin drop. No one knew but the parents of the couple and the wedding party. We yelled for the music to start and handed the bride some tissues. So, again, I think Sharon Naylor, untoward surprises should be avoided as well.
Yes, absolutely. My jaw just dropped at that one. So you want to make sure that you are being really appropriate with the news you're sharing. Humor is a great thing in a toast. You want to make sure you grab the crowd right at the beginning and keep them laughing all the way through. You mix humor and sentimentality and you have a winning toast.
And does it help to focus the toast around a special theme or one set of subjects?
Yes, absolutely. The best way you can do this to have a beginning, middle, and end of your toast is to start off with a great quote. I have a lot of those in the book, and we also, I think, have it on the NPR website. A great quote that you can start with and then talk about the couple and wrap up with the quote. And to have a theme to your toast makes it really fantastic for everyone.
And one more suggestion. Is it a good idea to rehearse?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Rehearse, make sure you're speaking to someone you trust who's going to give you honest feedback, and make sure that, Claire said before, don't speak too long. Make sure they can time you and check about how you're speaking. When people get nervous, they speak very quickly, and the person you're practicing with will be able to tell you what your pacing is like.
And work with the microphone you're going to be using so you learn how not to pop your peas.
Yes, absolutely.
That's a little piece of professional advice there. Sharon Naylor, thanks very much for coming in.
Oh, thank you.
Sharon Naylor is the author of over 30 wedding planning books, including your special wedding toast. If you're stuck trying to find that perfect anecdote for your wedding toast, you can see her suggestions for quotes at our website at npr.org/talk. And you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Claire Lewis is still with us. Her book is called Exposed: Confessions of a Wedding Photographer. And the photographer, you're in the position of the observer. You're obviously in the ceremony and with the ceremony, but not of it. You're sort of semi-detached as you're watching all of this go on.
Right, which actually puts you in such an interesting position, because you're very involved in what's going on, and the people have given you this extraordinary access. I mean, you're right there when the bride's putting on her clothes, and 2 minutes after they've said their vows, when they're having their private moment, you're there documenting it. And at the same time, as you say, you're not actually part of it. So you have this distance that lets you just watch what's going on and observe and document.
If those of us attending a wedding were to watch the professionals involved, the photographer, the organist, for example, the guy who called earlier, and various other people, the wedding planners, would we notice when the eyes started to roll and cringing started to go on?
Well, ideally you wouldn't, because I think part of being a professional is you're not supposed to roll your eyes in a way that anyone can see. But, you know, other times things just happen when everybody rolls their eyes. I mean, I did a wedding a couple of years ago when I was just thinking about people talking about toasts. I mean, the best toast I ever heard was one that never happened, because it came time for the toasts and the bride and the groom and the best man had gone off as a threesome to consummate the wedding in the coat room. And everybody rolled their eyes at that point, you know. Nobody could quite believe this was happening, and we're all banging on the door saying, don't you want to come out of there and hear your toasts? And, you know, nobody was going to pretend at that point that this wasn't completely crazy. But most of the time, you know, as a photographer, I think my job is to watch what's going on and document it, as I say, but not comment on it.
Let's talk with Bethy. Bethy's with us from Madison in Wisconsin.
Hi. I'm a former wedding planner, so I guess my stories I've been thrown up on. I totally relate to all of the stories that people are telling here. But I think probably the best toast I ever heard was, I was a wedding planner in Massachusetts, and shortly after gay marriage was legalized, I planned a wedding for two females that had been together for over 20 years. And the mother of one of the brides was formerly a conservative Christian and very much against her daughter's choices, and got up at the wedding and talked about how when she had breast cancer, her daughter and all of her daughter's friends, many of whom were in the gay and lesbian community, took turns caring for her, and how that really changed her perspective on what God was and what religion meant in her life, and she was ready to accept her daughter's partner as her own daughter due to that. And there was not a dry eye in the house. It topped every toast I've ever seen, and it was a really, really, really interesting wedding to see all these people coming together to celebrate these two women very shortly after gay marriage was legalized. So,
well, Claire, it's wonderful to hear. There are moments that, you know, hey, this is a great wedding.
Oh, absolutely. And sometimes I come home and it restores my faith in the whole thing, you know, because I'll come home from a wedding thinking that two people have absolutely found the right person. You know, exactly. And it's wonderful. It's wonderful to watch and to see. And what Bethy, I think her name was just saying about the commitment ceremonies, they can sometimes be some of the sweetest and the nicest, because I think often it's two people who've really had to work to overcome obstacles in terms of society and in terms of their families to get to that place. And they're very conscious of what they're doing and the commitment they're making. And I'll see that sometimes in all sorts of couples, second marriages, where widows, all sorts of things. And it's absolutely fantastic when you see two people who clearly know exactly what they're doing and why, and they're so well matched. It's a really wonderful thing. And it's wonderful to photograph.
Bethy, thanks very much for the call. Appreciate it.
Thank you. I enjoy the show.
Thank you. And we'll get back to the funny stories when we come back. Stay with us, if you would. Claire Lewis, her book is Exposed, Confessions of a Wedding Photographer. We'll continue to take your calls about the best and most memorable toasts you've ever heard at a wedding. We also hope to speak with Adnan Pachici, the senior Iraqi parliamentarian, is in Washington, D.C. We want to talk to him about political progress in Iraq or not. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. We're talking with Claire Lewis, a wedding photographer. Her book is The Confessions of a Wedding Photographer. The title is Exposed. She's with us from our studios today at KQED, our member station in San Francisco. If you'd like to tell us about the most notorious, interesting, and printable wedding toast you've ever heard, give us a call at 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. Claire, I wanted to ask you, as a professional, any advice for couples who are getting married about how to get good photographs of the big day?
Well, I would say there's a couple of things. For the bride, I definitely say don't put on a lot of makeup. I think that one of the mistakes that people make are to think that they suddenly have to put on sort of Broadway-worthy makeup on their wedding day. I mean, unless you happen to love doing that and you're used to it, you should not do that, or you'll end up like the couple that I saw who at the altar wouldn't kiss because she was worried it would mess up her makeup, which seems a great shame.
It seems you must take a lot of weddings in the Napa Valley in 102 yeah. degree heat. The makeup
absolutely
melts.
I have watched more people's faces melt in pictures, and it's not a pretty thing at all. So this is not a good idea. And along those same lines, it's a bad idea to do an outdoor noon black tie wedding in July in Napa, too. But, you know, it's funny that the main thing for getting great pictures would be, and even if this sounds a little lame, I'd say, you know, keep a sense of humor and forget about the fact that you have a photographer. Let the day be what it is. Have fun. Be with your friends. Keep an eye on what it is that you're really there for, which is to get married and to celebrate. And forget about the fact that anybody's taking pictures at all, because the ones that you will love will not be the ones where you look and smile at the camera. You know, 20 years from now, those won't mean a thing to you. The ones that will be some moment that was caught when you had absolutely no idea that your picture was being taken. And when something's going on between the couple that is really about why that day is happening at all, about why they're supposed to be together. And that has nothing to do with your relationship to the photographer. And so looking at the photographer and smiling on cue is never going to produce the really good pictures.
Is it also a good piece of advice to hire a professional in general and don't let your Uncle Mike do it?
You mean in terms of the pictures?
Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, really, although I contradict myself here because I didn't hire a professional for my wedding. But if you really do care about the pictures and you don't want to be worried about it, yes, do hire a professional. I mean, for the same reason that you're not, you know, having a friend cook the food, you know, it's a good idea to get the best person that you can find and that you can afford, and then tell them what you want, and then leave them alone and let them do what they do and forget about it until the pictures arrive. Yeah.
Let's talk with Mary. Mary's with us from Phoenix in Arizona.
I talked about the changes that happen after the wedding, and I was a bridesmaid, when Lynn Ann Bogle married Tim Wise. And I said that one of the things that changes is the bride's initials, and in this case it would be L-A-B to L-A-W. And then I said, in front of a full Catholic reception hall, Tim, tonight it's time to lay down the law.
Not too bad. That's right in there. That's right up in brevity also with the custom-made haiku. That's not so bad.
And the picture of the priest's face right after I said that is precious.
Mary, thanks very much. Remind me to invite you to my next wedding.
Okay,
bye-bye. Let's see if we can get one last caller in and do Glenn. Glenn's with us from South Carolina.
Hi, how are you?
Very well, thanks.
Good. I attended a wedding once where the bride stood up and toasted to the groom. Unbeknownst to him, she planned a little prank where she told all of his old girlfriends to turn in their keys to his apartment. And she had about a dozen women ages 18 to 82 come up and put their keys in a bowl after giving him a hug and a peck on the cheek. And after the 82-year-old woman sat down, a young man walked up and gave him a wink and a hug and put his key in. The reception fell out. Everyone laughed to tears.
That sounds like a wonderful story, Glenn. It might, sounds like a wonderful party, too.
We had a good time.
Appreciate the phone call.
All right. Thank you.
Bye-bye. And Claire Lewis, are you off this weekend to photograph some weddings?
You know, I actually have the weekend off, which is a good thing because after that, I'm working every weekend. So I'm going to enjoy a little downtime this weekend.
Well, good luck and have a good time.
Thank you.
Claire Lewis's book is called Exposed, The Confessions of a Wedding Photographer. She joined us from KQED in San Francisco. If you were hoping to hear Adnan Pachici with us today, he's been tied up in traffic, I guess, or in any case, he's not been able to make it to the studio. We'll try to reschedule him for another day. We apologize. Stay with us, though. In just a moment, we're going to talk summer movies with Bob Mondello, 800-989-8255. If you'd like to join us, email us talk@npr.org.